This is CliffCentral.com. Auto Central, powered by Auto Trader on CliffCentral.com.
Right, folks, good morning. Welcome to Auto Central, brought to you by Auto Trader, your trusted motoring marketplace. And we're back live, and 2018, 22nd of Jan. I can't believe one more Monday and January is history and for the bay.
Eventually.
Before you know it, it'll be Christmas.
Eventually. I mean, the January is like 3 months long.
What? January is like 3 months long.
It feels that way.
I don't know. Look, well, I only got back to the office last week, so it's been quite a nice start. I had a good holiday, which was needed,
much
and deserved. And anyway, yeah. So in the studio today, Fazana, how are you doing?
Good, thanks, and you, Ty.
Yeah, good, thanks, Chad.
Yeah, hi there.
And Lawrence, how are you guys?
No complaints.
I'm not sure where George is. Anyway,
traffic.
He's probably stuck in traffic, as you do. So I still swear by riding a scooter, guys. I really, really do. Anyway, let's get straight into the swing of things. Quite a lot obviously happening over the December period, and I see that...
Exactly. Par for the course.
Par for the course is, yeah. You know, always something happening in the motor industry. But I see Ford has recalled another 2,900 Ranger Buckies in the US after another airbag death.
But this is only in the US, though.
It is only in the US.
It doesn't affect...
Yeah, no alarm bells for any of our South African Ranger drivers. But I see... So Ford is telling owners of about 2,900 Rangers, small pickup trucks, not to drive them after finding out that an exploding Takata airbag inflator killed the driver in West Virginia. And this is what was strange for me about this article is they're recalling vehicles that were manufactured in 2006.
Yeah, expiry dates on airbags. We've actually got a piece on autotrader.co.za under our news and review sections, and that actually explains how airbags work and that.
Yes.
And they've got basically almost pyrotechnics in them.
Yes.
Because it's an explosive system.
Well this is what happened.
It's a gas generator.
Yeah.
And now if that stuff basically goes off or is faulty or has an expiry, as many airbags technically do, this type of thing can happen. And yeah, there was just a batch. And anything can happen. It can arise from improper storage, moisture getting into the unit, something of the sorts that can just... It's a gas generator, generates nitrogen gas mixing...
The inflators which use ammonia nitrate as a propellant can explode with too much force. And obviously what it does is when it does explode, it obviously, you know, the metal canister that it's manufactured in explodes and pretty much shrapnel...
Well, you got the airbag going off, but it's going off a lot stronger than what it should go.
Yeah.
And those of us that were really naughty as teenagers and youngsters and that, we'd take small little firecrackers and you'd wrap it in insulation tape.
Absolutely.
Tom Thumbs and you wrap it in insulation tape because it makes the bang bigger.
Increase the pressure.
It increases the pressure, and that's what's happening now. As soon as moisture gets in, it's actually increasing the pressure. You can't compress a liquid.
Yeah.
So that's what's happening. It's creating higher pressures than what it's actually designed to operate at.
Yeah.
And that's what makes it dangerous. And that, listen, Ford's not the first one, so let's not...
they've spoken about over 19 auto manufacturers are being phased in over the next few years and expected to reach 42 million vehicles and 69 million inflators. So this is obviously a problem that goes
the
way
thing
back.
Is, with Takata is the main supplier for airbags for just about everybody.
Yeah.
Many manufacturers.
And over the last few years, they have been embroiled in this massive issue with all of their equipment having failures.
Yeah.
So I think Takata is up the creek without a paddle.
Well, listen, I mean, we know that they've obviously stopped manufacturing these things. So this is obviously something that's going to be phased out over time because, you know, obviously their product is still in a lot of vehicles that were manufactured. Hello, George.
How's it, Ty?
How are you doing?
Can you?
Good. Traffic, Monday morning, typical?
Nah.
Not. Nah. Okay, cool.
Except for Rivonia Road.
Yes, always a problem on Rivonia Road. But you're not really what I saw in the article as well is that only 3.7% of the vehicles that have been recalled have actually been fixed. So if you work that out as a number, it's probably 87 of the 2,900 on this recall. So that still means that there's a hell of a lot of vehicles out there that are still, you know.
When you look at accidents, insurance write-offs, when... The cars have now reached the end of the life. Most people only keep their car for 3 years. So the original owner of that vehicle, which is listed with the dealership, is no longer... Yeah.
So anyway, we'll keep an eye on that over the year. But I'm sure that's not going to be the first or the last that we hear of vehicle recalls. I don't know if you guys are aware, and I think most of you obviously would be, there was, you know, some really, really terrible news over the December period with idiots throwing rocks off of bridges.
Opportunistic, and I know that there were individuals.
Absolutely, and there were, you know, two young children that were, you know, that were killed because someone thought it would be fun to throw a rock.
But this is not a new, this is not a new thing, eh?
It's not a new thing, and it doesn't only happen in South Africa. I mean, there's five teens in America who have been denied bail currently because they threw a rock off a bridge. You know, and this was in Michigan in October and last year. So it's not just a South African thing, but you know, guys were saying, oh, we need to cover the bridges, we need to put, you know,
they've done that over the R300 in Cape Town.
They have done that on some bridges, but can you imagine the cost to do that on every single bridge in this country? It's not feasible. It really isn't. And I don't know if this is something, if these guys think it's fun, or I don't know why they're doing it.
I actually don't think it's got anything to do with naughty teenagers. I think this is, like Chad just said, opportunistic criminals. I'm going to disable your vehicle, and then when you pull over to the side of the road, I'm going to come and rob you.
Yeah.
is that what happened in this case? Were the criminals at the scene and robbing the people?
No, well, I mean, they haven't found the criminals. I know there was a 250,000 rand reward that was out and offered.
I think it was last week or the week before. There was a social media post. They actually caught a bunch of public, caught three guys on one of the bridges in KwaZulu-Natal
with rocks,
and there was a picture of this guy with somebody's foot in his throat. So that tells you the public has had enough.
Yeah.
And if the cops aren't going to take care of it, they will.
So, I mean, what would your guys' advice be to somebody driving? I mean, obviously, if you see a bridge coming up, firstly, take a look if somebody's standing, you know.
You should be scanning.
And a lot of this isn't happening during the day. A lot of it's happening at night. Well, you know, because really of the poor visibility in that. Exactly. If the road is clear, change lanes. Don't indicate it.
Yes.
But please, people, I'm going out here and I'm expecting you to use a little bit of savvy and a little bit of common sense. Yes. Don't go and change and swipe the car next to you.
No, absolutely.
But changing your lane as you pass underneath the bridge is going to make it a lot difficult for them to sit there. Yeah. He's not going to be able to switch lanes with that rock as well.
No, absolutely.
It's just going to... Yeah. It's more about being vigilant, knowing which bridges you're passing under, know the areas that you're driving.
Where this is happening, yeah.
And if you do approach a bridge, try and change lanes sort of just before
you can do that.
Yeah, I guess it's about being a little bit unpredictable is what Chad's trying to say.
Yeah,
you're trying to be a little bit unpredictable, so I suppose do something that they wouldn't expect.
I mean,
change lanes is one option.
Reducing your speed, because I mean, they're obviously trying to time that rock based on how they see you coming in.
Yeah, too slow is also going to be a problematic. Yes. I think changing lanes is probably the best, but you know, do something that they're not going to expect, like straddle the lanes and then move into one of the lanes. They won't know which one you're going
to
move into.
Exactly.
This is not an excuse to go and do 300 kilometers an hour under a bridge.
No, absolutely it's not. But it's crazy that these things are happening, you know, and that, you know, like you say.
It's sad that we actually need to take the stance on it. And I mean, Lawrence, you're talking about and saying now it's not really feasible to go there and put up the fences. What's your other alternative? Visible policing? That's a waste of resource.
Well, you're going to maybe put a security guard on every single bridge, but also, what's that going to cost?
What is it going to do?
And is that out of the taxpayer's pocket?
Exactly. Where's it going to come from?
Yeah.
Who ends up paying policing? For that? Community policing, yes, that type of thing. But I mean, we are talking about these guys are hitting, like on the R59. You know, that has been...
That's in the middle of nowhere, Henley and Clippers.
Exactly, yeah. It's known to be relatively desolate. Yeah. And just one of those roads that has a couple of bridges that go over with nothing really on either end. Mm. So to position somebody out there, no.
Yeah.
Putting cameras up like they have done down at, let's say, I think it's Xavier Klippervier.
Mm.
They've got cameras up and that sort of stuff down in the south, the N12.
Either way, it doesn't matter what you're going to do. It's going to cost.
It's going
to
cost.
They just move to another.
Just move to another bridge.
I do believe that just putting up a little bit of fencing, something of the sorts, is going to be a deterrent. But once again, it's spending money on something because
it shouldn't exist in the first place.
Well, I just hope that the SAP actually can find these people and throw the full might of the law at these guys, because these should be behind bars. They shouldn't be allowed to roam the streets and do this again. Really shocking. Anyway, let's move on to the next story. Yeah, new models for South Africa. Obviously, January, New Year, 2018. There's obviously see a lot of manufacturers that will launch cars this year, and we've got five or six that we can take the listeners through here. And I think obviously one of the big ones is that there's a new Volkswagen Polo that's about to hit our shores. Is that coming out this week, Lawrence?
This week, yeah.
This week,
fantastic.
Yes.
And
I'll be traveling to PE for that one.
Okay, fantastic.
Thursday, Friday. So if you want to get on the social media channels on Auto Trader, I'm going to be keeping live updates on that.
Okay,
so
magic.
There's going to be live updates. You can also follow my Twitter handle. Personally, if you don't want to wait for the retweet from Auto Trader and that, at Chad Lukoff. And I'll be tweeting live and that sort of stuff and giving you the facts and figures as it breaks, basically on the local launch. A couple of live videos and that as well going out on our social media, on our Auto Trader South Africa Facebook page and the likes. So if you stay on top of that one, because it's quite an important car.
I believe it.
VW Polo Viva is also launching soon.
Yeah.
Martin Pretorius is going to be attending that launch and giving us a little bit of live information from that. But yeah, Polo's launching this week. So
now, just quickly,
follow.
I mean, one of the key things here of the Polo is I see they've got 94 millimeter longer wheelbase. I mean, essentially, that's just under 10 centimeters. I mean, how much difference can that really make?
On the interior, that's a mile.
Really?
Yeah. No, really.
It doesn't sound like much on the outside.
I think the Polo is starting to represent what the old VW Golf used to be.
Yeah, it's filling a place.
It's filling a place that used to be filled by the Golf.
Yes.
If you remember the old jumbo Golfs, they were pretty big. And this seems to be tending towards that kind of size.
Yeah, I mean, the Golf has only gotten bigger with each and every incarnation of it. And each and every time it gets just that little bit bigger, it moves further away from the initial core design, which was small, compact hatch.
Yeah.
And the same thing happens as... The thing is, as a owner and somebody that sticks with the brand, the model you want, sort of, you want it to grow with you in a sense. So as your demands as a family and as you mature in that increase, they try and keep you in the same vehicle without needing you to swap up and go up one. So you can stay in a Polo. If you were in a 9N Polo, you moved over into 9N3, you moved over into 6C, 6R, you
just carry on going.
It carries on going. You just move up the range and it just seems to grow with you.
Yeah.
It doesn't look inspiring. It just looks like more of the same, slightly different styling.
Yeah.
So I'd be very keen to see, you know, it in real life.
Yeah, absolutely. And then I see the Mercedes S-Class AMG Maybach is another vehicle that's going to receive two new, a V8 and V12 engines. I don't know if you guys have had any of inside scoop. I mean, you guys are the
nothing
guys that get
just
all the
kind of
info.
It's been quite quiet on that one. I think that's going to see a launch a little later, possibly second quarter.
Maybe third.
Possibly third.
Okay.
So there is a little bit of a tie-up with getting vehicles. The laws and regulations change with regards to clearing the vehicles.
Yeah.
It can take up to 90 days now.
Okay.
So it's making it tricky for the manufacturers to launch a vehicle on a specific date because it can be delayed by up to 90 days. And I mean, that's 3 months. That's a quarter.
Yeah. Well, I mean, didn't Mercedes-Benz have that issue with their Bucky last year?
Exactly.
Remember?
Correct. Yeah.
So, I mean, they managed to launch a car without even having one on the ground yet.
And we're still waiting for it.
And we're still waiting for it. That's right.
We're still waiting for it.
Hasn't arrived yet.
Hasn't arrived yet. Okay, cool. The Honda Civic Type R.
Mm.
And that's another one we'll be going on, but I think we're probably going to see that second quarter.
Second quarter. Mm. But, I mean, is this a car that excites you guys as petrol heads?
I haven't, in all honesty, I haven't had a chance to drive a Type R.
Okay.
So, very limited numbers in the previous generations.
Yeah.
And yes, I'm quite keen on it. I'd like to see what it's about and that. I do believe it to be very good in that, but we'll see what this update is.
Honda has always impressed me. I owned one
A
long time ago. I had the VTEC.
Okay.
And
I was gonna say, it wasn't the Ballard, was it?
No, it was actually. It was the Ballard VTEC. Yeah. At the time, it was the 160e VTEC.
Okay.
Before the actual badge VTEC got onto the back, they used to have the same engine, and I loved that car. That car, I sold it at 210,000 kilometers,
and it
was
just going
didn't miss a beat.
Didn't miss a beat.
In all the there's famous story about in all the VTEC units that they've produced, the millions and millions, they've never had a single VTEC failure.
Really,
the system itself, while relatively complex, and I mean it is, it's threading a needle at a stupid speed.
Yeah.
They haven't had a failure. They've just—it's brilliantly engineered in terms of the.
I'm just not too keen on the styling. It reminds me of
a little bit of a shopping cart boy racer.
Very much so.
Yeah.
Only guys that
have furious kind of
at a certain age can afford to buy that.
Yeah.
And by that time, you really that you should grow up a bit, you know.
I mean, what do you think this thing's going to set someone back? It's going to be pricey, no doubt.
Yeah, probably over $500,000.
Yeah, and you're
going
to
peg it somewhere about 680, 720
somewhere around
thereabouts.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we'll see what happens when it when they do launch it. Another one here, the BMW X2. I know
how many freaking X's can you get?
There's X1. X2 now, X3. We don't have an X4.
X4, X5, X6.
I have one.
And there is rumor of a bigger brother to the X6. Still coming, so but we actually haven't, we've only seen artist renderings, but it's filling a gap. It's the small midsize SUV
So this is almost crossover.
I want to say almost boutique, like the
Q2. Q2 vibe, yeah.
Okay.
Raised driving position, you're not necessarily going to get much more interior space, but you're going to get a slightly raised driving position, a little more practicality, a little more ground clearance. And the SUV market is still the fastest and largest growing market in South Africa. Thank you, Johannesburg Roads and our national roads for their wonderful, wonderful maintenance and upkeep. Please note that's dripping in sarcasm.
Is this just a standard BMW? It's not electric, or is it a hybrid? Or
There may very well be a hybrid option introduced at a later stage, okay, but right now I don't think BMW has...
It's a gap filler.
Yeah, I don't think BMW has had resounding success with their hybrid e-drive options.
Yeah.
And they may offer it, may not, depends. The business decision needs to be made there, whether it's viable to bring it in.
And then last one on
this is like a, it's like a crossover, this X2. Well, the X1's a crossover.
I don't know if this is a big small car or a small big car.
Which one?
The X2.
The BMW. Oh, I thought you were saying Porsche.
I think it's just like a medium-sized medium car.
Okay, well, let's just leave it at that. And then, yeah, George, you've alluded to now the Porsche Cayenne.
There is a Porsche launch currently on internationally.
Okay.
So some of the guys have flown overseas. There's Jaguar E-Pace, which is currently on the go now, and Porsche in Dubai.
You know, Porsche, to its long history, they don't change much on the car, and that's what I think keeps the car a car value up.
Yeah,
is it doesn't radically change like a BMW or an Audi, okay, or you know, the styling stays very similar.
Yeah,
across the generations of the car. I think is good for the value of the car.
Yes,
but it's a very tricky game to play, because with the way that the other, and especially the German marques, are progressing and evolving in terms of technology, they need to ensure that their technology stays up to date.
Yeah.
But the styling retains a sort of traditional approach.
Which I think they pull off.
Yes,
I mean, they could probably go a little bit further with their tech. But the styling definitely doesn't change much.
One thing I did note, though, is that they're not pitching it to the same sort of prospective buyer that would be climbing into, let's say, an X5 or X6 or a Q5 or Q7 type thing with the Cayenne. I saw that with the Panamera, which those rivals there are S-Class and 7 Series. You don't really put it up against Aston Martin Rapide. That's just a totally different league. Is that Porsche has designed their vehicles to retain the driver involvement and not pull away from it, and not just make it this Luxo barge that cruises along doing everything for you.
Yeah.
Porsche wants you in the driver's seat. They don't want you in the back seat. They don't want you in the
back. They actually want you to be engaged.
They want you to be engaged while driving. Experience the vehicle while you're driving. And that I've got fantastic appreciation for. And that, for me, puts it above, because I'm a driver myself.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter what I'm climbing into, I want an engaging driving experience. Sure, there are times when I want to be driven.
Sure.
But it does that to a fair extent, but it doesn't do that as well as some of the other Germans.
And I see that's probably going to launch in quarter 2, June.
We may see it just a little bit later, okay. But let's take a look at mid-year.
Yes,
just and then, after.
Sorry, Lawrence, you were alluding to this as well, the Jaguar E-Pace. I see that's one
very
that's
interesting
also
one, yeah.
Because I drove the F-Pace last year.
Okay.
Seriously impressed.
Yeah.
And I'd like to see what they're going to do with electric.
E-Pace.
Yeah.
Mm. Okay, cool. So that's the only difference there then.
Pretty much electric. It's plug-in hybrid, yeah.
All right. And I see, okay, cool. So coming out of Norway, 80 Tesla owners in Norway have sued the US automaker over misleading advertising, saying that their electric car did not deliver the promised performance. The plaintiffs complained that the real power of the Tesla SP85D, a sedan with one of the fastest accelerations in the world, was only 350 kilowatts and not 522 as advertised.
Detuned.
So my question is, these folks obviously go and get these cars and they put them through through their tests, and if it doesn't deliver the numbers, I think they have every right to go and complain about the vehicle, don't they?
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to understand deeper, around what the response is going to be.
Well,
you know,
I don't know if you know, but there were 133 car owners that complained in December 2016, and Tesla actually landed up paying these guys 65,000 kroner, which is between 8,000 dollars, 7,000 euros as compensation. These guys are not happy about the fact that they didn't get what they paid for.
Can I quickly throw in 2 cents there, whether it's accurate or not? I'm just going to go out on a limb here and say cold batteries don't perform as effectively as warm batteries.
So do you think when Tesla obviously tests in the car could be something like that?
Could be extreme condition.
That world's greatest drag race was done in California in the middle of summer.
Yeah.
Yeah. So...
But I mean, 350 versus 522.
No, that is big. But you always got to get this as well, because there's a quoted, like a DIN, which is basically at the flywheel.
Yeah.
And that's never going to be what you get at the wheels. Mm. There's drivetrain losses and the likes. And while the drivetrain on the Tesla is considerably more simple, there can still be a loss. Let me put it that way. I don't know enough about the way that they quote their figures and where they are measuring them to be able to say for certain. But this isn't new that we've encountered outputs, real-world outputs, that are a little bit of a cry from the advertised outputs. This has been happening since day dot.
So anyway.
I mean, I'd like to understand the rebuttal that Tesla's going to give, because we've only got one side of the story here.
Yes.
But, you know... I agree with Chad. 350 kilowatts to 522. It's not like it's 50 kilowatts. If they were crying about 50 kilowatts, yeah, I could understand. Tesla, yeah. What the hell are you doing?
Yeah.
And why would Tesla...
That's a VW Polo that's missing.
Exactly. Why would Tesla go, you know, and market 522 kilowatts when in the background they know it's 350? That's a massive blunder.
Yeah, it is a huge blunder.
You know, so I don't know if this is entirely accurate, what the conditions were, you know, all of that stuff. I think this is just a marketing ploy, to be honest.
So it might be. I mean, it's probably going to go to court and you'll see what happens and what comes out of it. There's going to be tests and probably be dragged out. So
I mean, you think back on the first iPhone 6. And the first thing that happened after that iPhone 6 was launched was the thing bent. Remember that?
Do you remember that? Yes. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They haven't changed the styling on the phone. That hasn't changed at all. It's it's still the same sort of form factor.
Yeah.
And you don't see people walking around with curved phones nowadays.
No.
So somebody tried to do a marketing ploy that tried to destroy what Apple had just created.
Yeah.
You know, this could be the same thing.
Could be the same thing. So we'll keep an eye on that.
This could be Tesla funded.
Maybe. Tesla's very good at marketing. Mm.
So this is keeping them in the news. We're talking about it, aren't we?
Yeah, well, exactly.
Okay.
Well, yeah, no.
Not that they need to sell them, because I mean, 8,465 of them sold in the Nordic countries.
It's been a Trump move.
Yeah. A little bit, yeah. And there's no such thing as bad publicity.
And Norway is their biggest, consumers of electric vehicles.
So clearly you guys have adopted it. You like the idea. You like the concept. Let me make sure that you're buying mine and not somebody else's.
Yeah.
Let me keep it in the news.
Sure. Oh, well. If it is
that just South African thinking? Is it just me?
Yeah, you know what? There's lots of guerrilla marketing tactics out there.
That marketing is pretty much about smoke and mirrors. I mean, at the base of things. So we'll have to keep an eye on that one. The US to carefully review. General Motors has put in a request to test an autonomous car without a steering wheel. So on Friday they unveiled their Cruise AV. So General Motors paid $1 billion for the acquisition of Cruise Motors in 2016. These guys want to now, they've asked the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration to exempt it from a number of federal standards that cannot be met with a driverless car. So obviously there's rules and regulations that say a car has to have four wheels, has to have a steering wheel. These guys have now created a vehicle that doesn't have a steering wheel. It will be completely controlled by an app. You won't be able to purchase the vehicle, so you can't go out and buy it. This is for ride sharing and kind of taxi services. What you'll do is you'll hail this vehicle on your app. You can actually set the temperature and the seats and absolutely everything. So when this car arrives, you can pretty much spec it to how you want it to drive. But I think, you know, it's interesting to... I mean, a car without a steering wheel. I mean, that's before its time.
You know, I think I'm pretty accepting of new technology. This is a little bit scary for its time.
Well, I mean, and they want to bring it out next year.
Wow.
So this is now for 2019. Yeah. So the executives said they plan to introduce a large-scale fleet of self-driving taxis by 2019, a time frame some analysts consider ambitious. I mean, it obviously
very
is
ambitious.
Very ambitious. But I mean, yeah.
Why do I have that saying?
iRobot.
You were so preoccupied with whether you could or couldn't that you didn't stop to think whether you should.
Yeah.
You know, just because you can do something doesn't mean the world is ready for it.
I mean, there are videos of this vehicle on the net and stuff like that. I mean, this thing is kitted out. It's got more cameras than a Hollywood film set. I think it's exciting.
Maybe that's my African mindset. Just seeing all the pitfalls from our infrastructure here. Yeah, maybe the infrastructure is different in other centres and that, but I don't believe it's that far removed.
Well, listen, you've had the opportunity. I mean, you drove that Volvo that's got, you know, you push the button and the car can drive itself.
I drove here and did it. You know, I'm in the Mercedes-Benz E300.
Yeah.
And the same thing, lane keep, radar guided cruise control, it does make the drive a lot easier, but there's still such a variety of factors, outside factors that you still need to consider, variables that just, I don't know.
Well, I'll give you an example. So you've got, there's no steering wheel on this car, right?
Yeah.
So all of the radar have to be external so that they can kind of pick up all of the all the stuff. So I'll tell you what happened to me yesterday. I'm busy driving my car, and I've got radar assisted cruise control.
Okay.
And there's this big radar in the front of the car, and it does its thing. So I'm busy driving, radar assisted cruise control, and I set it to kind of follow the car in front of me.
You're on the highway, I'm assuming.
I'm on the highway, yeah. Talking to my wife in the passenger seat. Next minute, big orange frickin' light comes on the dashboard. Please clean the outside sensor, radar switching off.
Just like that,
just
while you're
like
driving.
That. Mm. Because
caught a bug or something.
A bug must have splattered onto the radar sensor, and it just said, I'm switching off now, sorry.
Mm.
So you've got no steering wheel, you know, and the radar doesn't work. What do you do? If a bug splats onto
the
radar.
Jump out the window.
Yeah, I mean, if
there's going to have to be such fail safes.
Yeah, there has to be redundancy. I mean, surely you've got to have then multiple. Try and drive through the Orange Free State when it's hot.
Till a one pops out.
There's locusts.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Sure, but Joe. So, I mean, that's. I think it's exciting. You know, a car with no steering wheel. I'm not quite sure if I'd get into one just yet, but that's what.
No, I think it's coming, and it's exciting. It is coming. It's absolutely exciting.
It's going to happen. Our heels in, though, it's a little bit ahead of its time.
Well, I mean, you know, if you look at it and you look at the kind of the sums of money that, you know, the OEMs are throwing at electrification. I mean, Ford has just announced that they're going to spend $11 billion by 2022 to create hybrid and all-electric versions of its vehicles. And this was announced at the Detroit Auto Show.
Oh, wow. Welcome to the party.
Yeah, so Ford executives said that the increased expenditure essentially doubles and extends Ford's previous $4.5 billion investment in electrification until 2020. So the guys are obviously throwing a lot of money at... You know,
in all honesty, they've been a little slow to the party.
They have been, because we haven't had
anything. You haven't heard anything
whether
it's hybrid or full electric.
Mm.
They've been very, very quiet on
that. They were stuck on diesel.
And you know what? When Chad says that, the first thing I think about is I think it was Nikola Tesla and Ford and someone else. Created the first, before Ford was launched, created the first electric car. One of the very first cars that were thought about was an electric car. And the only problem was they couldn't find or get an efficient enough battery. That was the big problem.
Yeah.
But
it's always been the problem.
But they knew back then that this was the future of the automobile.
Yeah.
And so they shelved that idea, and then Ford launched. And then Big Oil took over. Yeah. So Ford was first to the party, first to come up with a concept, and now they're late to the party.
Yeah, so anyway, so that's obviously...
Because, I mean, we see manufacturers that have got... I mean, we've now got companies that exist solely for electric vehicles, Tesla.
Yeah.
You know, and majority of the manufacturers have at minimum...
An electrification
a hybrid,
arm.
Yes.
Yeah, a hybrid option somewhere along the line, even if it is just Nissan Leaf or something of the sort. I mean, Nissan Leaf's full electric, but, you know, Toyota Prius.
Yeah.
Something of the sorts. But they've got hybrid options there. Just... minimal. And I don't think that it's a South African problem. I think it's a global problem. Yeah. I think they've just been just lagging a little bit there on that tech side.
Yeah, well, I think also, if I have a look at it, I mean, it's quite weird from a strategic point of view. I mean, these guys are pretty much letting the cat out the bag. You know, these are big brands and big businesses.
That's a good thing.
With plenty competition saying, this is the route that we're going down. So it's kind of like, you know, here's my strategy. This is what we're going to go and create. But I think if you're not playing in this, you're going to get left behind, you know.
Do you guys possibly think, I mean, George, you may be able to weigh in on this. Do you think that this is deliberate? This is holding back and letting the bugs be ironed out instead of investing the money straight off the bat just to be first to market?
Let the other guys pay the school fees.
Let the other guys pay the school fees, yeah.
So, I mean, I think smart companies do that. You're either got to be first or last. If you're somewhere in between, you know, you kind of pick up all the
wallpaper,
bugs.
Yeah.
So if we look at other industries, Apple is never first Or hardly ever first with technology. If you look at their Apple Home device, Amazon Alexa launched first, Google Home is out there. Apple's still to bring a product to the party. Apple didn't bring the watch out first. So they almost perfect the technology before they release it.
That's what I'm thinking.
And that's maybe what Ford is doing.
Piggyback off the R&D and take a look at whether it is actually viable to spend that money, and it's a slightly more calculated risk.
Weren't they first with the I wanted to say Discman, listen to me,
with the iPod? Yes,
iPod, yeah.
But MP3 there were other MP3 players. Yeah, there were. So the Walkman and then the MP3 player. But yeah, what Apple did again was they perfected it. They made it smaller. Yeah. They made more able to take on more songs, and they perfected its design. Yeah. So they've been doing that forever.
Yeah.
And they got Ford's doing
the same thing. They got the recording artists to sign on to make their music into MP3s. Jeez.
They just did it properly. Yeah. You know, and maybe Ford's doing it properly.
Yeah.
Very smart.
So, I mean, geez, like, boys, that's half an hour of just stuff that's happened over the last few weeks in the motor industry. And obviously, you know, as the show goes, we'll keep everybody abreast as to what's happening. What we're going to do now is jump into our F1 segment. And George always has a big smile when we talk F1.
I love this
and
next
I must
story.
Say, well, me too, because I'll tell you what, F1 has just got almost, you know, well, has got a lot more kind of appealing to me if this was to come true. But I see that ex-F1 champ Nico Rosberg has pretty much said on a Twitter poll that he would come back and race if they either bring back the Las Vegas F1 or they bring an F1 Grand Prix to South Africa at Kyalami.
All right, let me be the troll in the drunk water.
Don't.
Put it to bed. It's never going to happen.
We cannot afford it.
Likelihood that it's never going to happen. But you know what? We pulled off a Rugby World Cup. We pulled off a Soccer World Cup. Chances are we may be able to pull this off if F1 comes to the party.
No, look, there's no doubt we could. The fact, who's going to pay for it?
Let's just get in my simple brain here. Can Kyalami host an F1?
No.
No, I think structurally and the track they can. Of course they can.
No, they just upgrade. FIA grades the tracks.
We're a Formula 3 highest grade that we can get.
Yeah.
Have they graded the track since the changes?
Correct. Yes. Yeah. It was built according to FIA. I think it's a grade B or something.
It's a grade B because you need an A grade, but yes, they only need to change one or two things on that track to make it an A1 grade.
But that's an investment on top of. The big thing here is the finances to host one of those events.
$100 million.
It's pretty much what was sunk into purchasing the racetrack.
Yeah, look, you say that. I honestly believe if we brought an F1 to South Africa that we would, okay, so maybe we'd take a bit of a knock, but I really think it would do a hell of a lot for motorsport,
for this
I think,
economy.
You know, absolutely. If you had that F1 over, let's say, a three day weekend or whatever it is.
Well,
generally speaking,
with Formula One races, it's an entire week. It starts on the Monday. It ends on the Monday.
Yeah.
And it's an entire festival around the track and the cars and everything. But once again, when they say they bring the circus, they bring the circus and you pay to have
for
the circus.
No, for sure. But exactly. I mean, you know, you can't just think about the money that would be generated, let's say, at Kyalami. So they might take a knock there, but if you look at the restaurants, the hotels, the rest of the world will have a knock-on effect.
Absolutely. Somebody upstairs just needs to make the decision and say, right, the government's going to
come on, we can pull this off. You can't tell
and somebody
me.
That doesn't have greedy fingers. Now, one of the other things is Kyalami Residents Association. Because I can promise
don't be
you
like
after
Bob.
Half an yeah, no, but unfortunately these guys are the because buddy, you bought a house
next to a racetrack.
I'm sorry, Corin, what did you think was going to happen?
Well, I mean, you know, who knows? I mean, if you have,
whinging about
property
the traffic,
value might go up. Who knows? I think it'd be awesome.
It'll be awesome, and I think we should try and pull it off. Let's all tweet Rosberg.
Tweet Rosberg, and let's get the
make
F1 Grand Prix to Kyalami.
You know,
I mean,
a couple of
really,
corners,
really
on
well, look,
the track,
we saw how big it was when they hit Santon.
I went to watch that. Formula was really,
was
really.
Renault?
Yeah, Renault were out.
It was Renault, yeah.
Is it more expensive to do a street race or to do a track race?
Street race.
The infrastructure doesn't exist. Yeah. So you need to basically build the infrastructure in terms of the stands and that. Ticket prices would be astronomical, and us skimp skint South Africans, we're going to sit there and whinge about a 7,000 rand, you know, entry ticket to an event.
Yeah, but you know, the Kyalami Business Park actually be moving into that office park like that. Absolutely. There are a lot of businesses who wouldn't have to pay for tickets.
We actually have a friend who has his office faces out on the back street.
I used to work at a place that had an office there.
And it's really not bad on a Friday afternoon while they're doing some testing.
Exactly.
There's nothing wrong with it.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I'd love to see it. I really would. I'd like nothing more than to see it, but I just know that I'm not going to get excited or my hopes up for it because
until it's
unfeasible. Yeah.
For sure. But at least somebody's, you know, what's really, really nice
hats is off to the man for saying
kudos. And I wonder why he's kind of pegged South Africa as a Grand Prix that he would come back
because he
to
wants
race.
To come and see the Lions.
2018 engine rule change, George. I mean, we touched on this a little bit last year. Is it the FIA have said that you're only allowed three engines now? No, they're saying three. Although Mercedes dominated three, blah blah blah. What does it say? Yeah, three engines. Yeah, I mean, you know, these cars are spending. An engine costs between 12 and 14 million euros to build, and they build up to between 80 and 100 of these engines, and then they choose the four strongest ones for their season. I don't understand why, if there are rules and regulations around what type of engine you can use in the vehicle, then why are you only allowed to have four? Why couldn't you have a new engine for every race?
Because what the FIA are trying to do is they're trying to not... let the big teams with lots of money always win. They're trying to get everybody to be able to compete. And if you restrict the number of engines, so you can imagine somebody with unlimited deep pockets.
Yes, okay.
They can produce 100 engines.
Yes.
But you go to the back of the field to, you know, let's say at the
Minardi.
Moment, Renault or Minardi.
Yeah.
Those guys might only be able to produce 20 engines.
Okay.
Okay. So therefore, and it's like any numbers game.
Mm.
The more you produce, the result you're going to get out of a few of those that you produce is going to be a lot better.
Yeah.
So, you know, so if you just kind of cut that funnel down a little bit, you might be able to get the rest to compete. So it's more about the teams that don't have enough money than it is about, you know, trying to cut off the neck of the big teams. The big teams stand to lose, yes, but the small teams stand to gain.
Yeah. So I mean, what's your personal opinion? What is the George Minier opinion on this?
I think it's a good thing, but I think maybe the FIA are going a little bit too far and trying to regulate racing too much.
Yeah.
There should be other ways to try and get the other teams involved, like bigger fees, bigger fines, or other ways instead of trying to restrict the technology itself. Find a different way than restricting engines.
Yeah. Oh well.
Maybe they're just being lazy.
Maybe they are. I don't know, guys. Any opinions from your guys' side?
Similar to the homologation that happened out in the in just about any racing is you limit the number. You try and limit how much money can be spent by the big money teams.
You want to stop checkbook racing.
You don't. Yeah, you do.
It's the bane of all motorsport. The guys who got the money
start winning.
They start winning.
And they keep winning because they can afford to constantly replace engines and the likes and a brand new engine each and every time, whereas the smaller teams are sitting there and they're trying to run the same engine 2 years in a row.
Yeah.
The thing is, if you limit it to three, you know, just three engines and that, what's stopping them from building and doing the R&D on 20, 30 different engines, like say, finding the strongest ones and just, okay, well, now that we've now got a bulletproof one, those are the three that we're going to use.
Yeah.
They've still got the money for the R&D to put into creating three bulletproof engines
that the other teams don't have.
I don't think that this solves the issue.
No, it doesn't solve the issue.
But that's what they're trying to do. So the FIA's got a good spirit in it. They're trying to get the lower end teams to participate and catch up.
Yeah.
But I don't think this is the right mechanism.
The only way to do it is to sit there and run controlled spec engines.
Yeah.
Seal it off.
I'm the FIA. I seal the engine. Here's your engine for this race. Go have fun. Everybody's on the same engine.
Well, that's what I mean. I was going to say that. Wouldn't that make it? Because then everyone's racing.
But then it's also not Formula One.
You got to flip that around. On a lot of technology comes out of Formula One.
Sure.
So as soon as you seal off the engine and you give the thing to the team to race,
there's no progress.
Yeah.
But that's what happened. What was that other where the countries raced against each other? Didn't they all have the same cars, same specs, same
A1.
Engine? The A1. That was A1. And that didn't really last, did it?
2 years.
Yeah.
The thing is, Formula One is largely based on motoring enthusiasts and brand enthusiasts following their brand.
Yeah.
And so if you sit there and say, well, great, this is a Ferrari body, but it's all running Ford engines.
Yeah.
You know, you just lose everybody that's a Ferrari fan.
Absolutely. And I mean, these cars have been, you know, these brands have been built on the back of making big, fast engines. And, you know, they want to win these races. Yeah. They want to put what they can into their
As George says, the best thing to come out of it is the R&D that they do that filters down into us. And we've seen so much of it.
The upside for the other teams is FIA to force them to share the technology. So, you know, you want to do R&D on 100 engines. Okay, well, you know, there's some mechanism that gets you to share some of that with the other teams.
I think then we sit with the Ford problem. I'm not going to do anything. I'm going to wait for you to do the work and you to spend the money.
Yeah, but then you don't win. So it's some sort of mechanism that allows you to use your R&D, but only for a certain period of time. So you get the head start.
Yes.
But then the other teams can come along, you know, and that could cause some sort of...
We have an issue a couple of years back where the one guy was selling secrets from the one team to the other team.
But it happens all the time, I think.
Yes.
I mean, happens in every...
I think when there's this much money involved, people tend to be a little more tight-fisted.
Well, absolutely. And you were talking about brands. I see Ferrari could be a monster.
I think Ferrari is going to be a monster.
Well, I mean, I don't know if you want to... touch on the story that's coming, that's just come out of Maranello, Italy.
They've been doing R&D in the background now for, you know, ever since Schumacher left Ferrari, and the team has been split and it's been fragmented. And I think the biggest problem with Ferrari is they didn't have a proper cohesive team, and they couldn't make the progress that they made in those years. A lot of what happened in the years of Schumacher and Barrichello was they brought the team together.
Yeah,
they created that camaraderie and you know what you might see has happened in Mercedes for the last couple of years hasn't been happening in Ferrari. Mm. But over the last two or three years, that is beginning to happen.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably the precursor to all of the technology now that you're going to see in 2018.
So either way, we're in for another good F1 season, I think, in 2018. All right.
Well, certainly have the characters
absolutely
to back that up.
Yeah. So, you know, between the two Ferrari drivers, I think they know their place. They know which one's the leading driver, and they know which one's the second driver, and I think they know where they're going.
When does the season kick off? Anyone
March.
Know?
March,
huh? Yeah. Okay, cool. Well, we'll keep a close eye on the developments of how many engines you can have.
Well, Ferrari's revealing this car on the 22nd of February.
I see that. So we'll wait and see what comes out of that. Right, guys, I think we're going to hand over to Chad and Lawrence. You guys have been playing nicely with the Renault Duster 1.5 DCR 4x4. Do you want to tell us a little bit about this vehicle, boys?
Well, it's a bit of a last hurrah for the Renault Duster in a sense. Well, at least for this one, because we've got what's believed to be an all-new Duster coming a little later on in the year. So Renault's just put a last little injection, a few little changes. It's a minor update.
They gave it some new makeup.
Yeah, they gave it a bit of makeup in that. But it genuinely has transformed the car.
Yeah, because, I mean, the Duster, when it came out originally...
It wasn't much to look at.
No, not much to look at, but I think it did well because I think it was the price point for it was really point. Good. I mean, you could get into a 4x4 for, what was it?
Under 300,000. Yeah, you were looking at about 280. Yeah. The cheapest 4x4. 280 when it launched.
Yeah.
At the moment, the 4x4 model is now 309,900, so call it 310,
okay.
Which still makes it like the fifth cheapest 4x4 vehicle that you can purchase in the country and one of the cheapest SUVs. The other ones we're talking about are, you know, workhorse Bocchis from some suspect manufacturers.
Yeah.
You know, and the Renault name, as much as it is Dacia overseas, it's in there with Nissan, Nissan, Dacia, Renault, they're all together. There's a lot of information sharing there. So it is a solid vehicle. It really is a cracking vehicle. And the more time you spend with it, the more endearing it becomes. So just let's run through the changes because the Duster is very much the same. You know, externally, in 2016, they updated the front grille. So they went from a three-slat design to a two-slat design, neatened it up a little bit and that. And at the back, the chrome garnish that had Duster on it, written on it, was now made matte black.
Okay.
They changed the roof rails and a few little odds and ends here and there. But, you know, the core of the vehicle was much the same. it just looked a little better now. Now, they've updated. It's got new headlights and taillights. Much better. Really looking nice and contemporary. They haven't done too much to the garnishings front and rear again, but they gave it black alloy wheels, and it does wonders for it, despite the fact that not many people like black alloys. It's a bit of a trend, and it gives it a nice sort of rugged feel.
Yeah.
It's the changes to the interior that make the biggest difference, though, because they've included a new material. If you don't select the leather, which is an optional extra, you get a fantastic fabric on the seats and on the door cards, and it's a nice hard wearing. It feels almost like a canvasy sort of material.
Like denim.
Yeah, I almost like denim. Yeah, denim's okay. Probably one of the best ways to describe it, but in sort of like a nice grey and black sort of stitch pattern contrast, it really looks nice. And they've redesigned the center console and center fascia, and they've been through the plastics, and the plastics feel a lot better. It was one of my early criticisms, yes, that I levied at it, was just, yeah, the plastics really feel, you know,
Plasticky, yeah.
Water bottle plastic.
Yeah.
And this one now feels a little more rugged, a little more, I'm not going to say soft touch,
yeah,
because it's still a bit of a rough and tumble vehicle. And you get the feeling that you could just take a bit of a pressure hose to the interior. Please don't do that. But you get the impression that you could do that, and it would withstand, and that's how you'd clean it. You know, it's one of those wipe off systems, yeah, surfaces. So it really feels good. They've got the 7-inch... almost like the R-Link-based infotainment system there. And it's a nice system. It really is. I'm still not too fond of the controls. Renault insists on putting the controls on a control pod behind the steering wheel, almost like a cruise control of vibe at the back there, whereas I would prefer to have some more steering wheel controls. Well, this one has a new design steering wheel, and they've moved the hooter from on the end of an indicator stalk now onto the
steering wheel
now, which was one of those quirky French approaches.
But they still left the cruise control button out in the middle of nowhere.
Doesn't the Hilux have it on the stalk as well?
Older ones. But I mean, just about everybody's moved over
taxi
to
taxi drivers sitting there.
Yeah. I mean, I had an old French car as well, and it was the same thing. And I thought that was very endearing when I climbed into the Duster. I'm like, wow, 30 years down the line, and this thing's still tooting there on the stalk. So that was great. So they have changed it. The new steering wheel is very nice. Feels great in the hands and that. And we're still talking about a vehicle that's only 310,000 Rand. It's still making the same power. So it's still making 80 kilowatts and 240 newton meters. But it's nice and economical. It's actually even more economical than when I drove it previously. When I drove it previously, I was hovering just below 8s.
Okay.
I was below 7s now.
Sure.
I was returning between 6.5 and 6.7. Still a bit of a far cry from Renault's claimed 5.2.
Yeah.
But, you know, sub-7s are very acceptable.
Yeah.
And the engine makes a great amount of torque. I've said this in all my reviews, and I'll say it again until the cows come home. The way it develops the torque is beautiful and makes it so great to drive. It's mated to a 6-speed gearbox, but first gear is actually very short, and now that's a criticism that I've heard from a couple of other journos and owners. Oh, but first gear's too short to do anything with. Great, then leave it. There's enough torque there to pull away in second.
Mm.
And when you're going off-road and you want to climb a little hill, you've now got first gear you can use, because it doesn't come with a low range, but it does have 3 drivetrain modes. So you've got it in two-wheel drive, you've got a 4x4 auto, so if you do happen to hit a gravel road, something of the sorts, it's going to start transferring power backwards and forwards as you need it to the wheels that need it. And then you can lock it into a 50-50 split.
Okay.
So that's when you're actually doing climbs.
Yes.
Doesn't have a low range, but that first gear is nice and short so that you can do the climbs,
yeah,
without overstraining and having to over-rev the engine. And I mean, that makes it risky if you start with high revs and high speed with off-road.
Sure.
You need to be able to sort of crawl in a sense.
Yeah.
And while this isn't got a true crawler function, it's going to climb some nice gradients, yeah, surprisingly enough, on its road tires, just with the lock and that short first gear.
Yeah, but I mean, you're not going to do the Dakar in something like this anyway, are you?
There are a couple. And granted,
there is
while they
really Renault Duster in the deck, or I actually have pictures of it.
Well, if you can hose it out, why not?
The thing is, while it's an FIA class, so it's only a silhouette,
yes,
class.
Okay.
So it's,
yeah,
a space frame with, yeah, what looks like a Duster over it.
Sure.
The dimensions are nowhere near the same. If it shares the windscreen, it's a lot.
Yeah.
But yes, they've promoted it there. And the Dusters do enjoy, you know, a little bit of local rally and 4x4 in that.
Okay.
They do enjoy a moderate amount of success there.
So it's quite capable.
It really,
you know,
is.
It is very capable.
It is very, very capable for what it is, which is essentially a soft roader,
mm-hmm,
but it's got 4x4
capabilities,
as much as it doesn't have low range. And as long as you're not expecting it to go out there and be a defender,
yeah,
You're never going to be disappointed.
So this is kind of like your, you know, I'm going away camping for the weekend. There might be one or two bumpy roads. You know,
I've got an active lifestyle, or you know, I go out to the
back, the bicycles on the
farm, something of the sorts. I like hitting on the the camping trip, the fishing trip, something of the sorts. Mountain biking. Granted, the 4x4 has a little less boot space than the 4x2, and that's just because of all the drivetrain and everything that sits underneath it. So the boot floor is a little higher.
Okay.
You lose a few liters there, but it's really not the end of the world. It's still beautifully spacious inside, nice and comfortable. Couple of criticisms, possibly could be a little quieter on the inside, but once again, you're keeping price in mind.
Yeah.
And the aircon is a little whimsical. Okay. You know, it never really blows properly cold, and it's only aircon, it's not climate control.
Okay.
But you know, if you want those creature comforts, you're going to have to start looking RAV4s, that sort of stuff.
Okay. But all in all, it sounds like a
very enjoyable, very
bar.
Agreeable car.
Okay.
Really do like it. So that review is going to be out during the course of the week. The video review, we just touched on a couple of the changes, so you'll be able to see the changes and the likes. The expression models and that in the range have also been updated, so they've also got a couple of new things. We now got cruise control across the range, electric windows at the back, and that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
So they've updated the entire range. The dynamic version is the most expensive one. Just to give you an idea, the 1.6 expression, so it doesn't have that diesel motor, it's got the 1.6 litre motor, 245,000 Rand, that's where it starts. And then you're just going to climb up to 309,900,
Okay.
And that's the top of the range one that we were driving, the 1.5 DCI dynamic four-wheel drive.
A rating out of 10, just to end this?
Okay. 6.
I'd go a little higher, hey? I actually really enjoyed spending the time with it. I like the fact that it was economical in that. I'm going to hover around mid-sevens.
Mid-sevens.
Okay. Yeah, fantastic. Better than its fuel consumption.
All right. Well, that's good to know. So that's the Renault. And something I wanted to ask you guys, and this is obviously our topical content, and I'll start with George on my left here, is... if it got to this, would you pump your own fuel?
Yes.
You would. Lawrence?
Yes.
Yes.
Chad?
Yes.
Fazana?
No.
You wouldn't?
No.
Okay. Well, this is something that I wanted to debate with you guys, because there
what's that? Is fuel dirty? Is it stinky?
You know, this is the
why
thing.
Wouldn't you pump your own fuel, Fazana?
Yeah, so
why would you let somebody else touch your car, Fazana?
Let's just kind of fast forward on that. I don't think the world will change to that in South Africa. What will happen with the advent of electric cars is filling stations
are going to become
electric charging stations, and that's where you'll do it yourself.
Yeah, so you're just going to literally rock up, plug your car in, and away you go. But I think let's ask the question, because we know that, I mean, it's going to take years and years and years to phase out petrol cars in this country. I think we still, you know, very much reliant on them.
I think our culture and our infrastructure doesn't allow, but it doesn't make sense that would be the norm. You're driving down the road and you need to fill your car. You also kind of, you know, most people when they stop at a filling station, what do? Facebook,
yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
And that those habits and those habitual ways of doing things, it takes long time to change.
Yeah.
So I just don't see it happening overnight.
Well, I think, I mean, it would cause uproar. I mean, I only think the unions would go absolutely crazy if, you know, there was a law made tomorrow that said, right, okay, from, you know, Monday, everybody's going to be pumping their
own petrol.
But
in America, is it a law? No.
No,
it depends.
It depends on the
state to state.
Yes.
Where we stayed, Chad and I stayed in the States, you wherever you stopped, you had to go and pay for your fuel, come outside and do it yourself. There are, I think it's only a handful of states in America that actually have petrol attendants.
There's only two states in America that have, so it's Oregon and New Jersey. Those are the only two. The rest of the...
But I don't think it's legislated. It's probably the culture that has driven that scenario over time.
Yeah. In the UK, they do. I think some garages pump jockeys, some don't. I can't recall. I've driven in the UK and I can't recall if
you fill yourself. I think you fill yourself, huh? Actually, you do fill yourself because...
Highway services.
And it was actually mentioned on the Grand Tour, and I was having a discussion about this, about in the UK, they have this habit of parking their car, filling it up, and then going in and doing like their weekly shopping.
And you leave the car...
And they're leaving the car right in front of the pump while there's a queue building behind
them. Can you imagine that in this country?
They're a lot more tolerant than what we are.
Yeah, absolutely.
They love queuing.
But I mean, you can just imagine the fear of, you know, like people like Vizana, who probably knows more than most other women about cars.
Yes.
A woman driving up to a petrol pump, trying to get out the car and figure this out now.
Most people don't even know which side of the car they're filling gap is.
Exactly.
Well, you just have
to look. Do you know how to tell?
Yeah, there's a little arrow.
There's an arrow on your freaking petrol.
Next to your petrol
gauge.
And if you don't have one, because not all cars have that, surprisingly enough, not all cars have, you need to think of the country of origin. And which side of the road they drive on. And it's always going to be on the sidewalk side. So if the country of origin, they drive on the right-hand side of the road, it's going to be on the right-hand side of the car. So that way, if you break down next to the road, you're not standing in traffic trying to
fill.
If you run out of fuel.
That doesn't apply to my Jeep.
Not?
No. The hole's on the left. It's an American car. Unless they change it because of the...
Because of the country that it's going to.
Generally, that doesn't change. The exhaust pipe and the fuel filler cap, generally as a rule, are basically designed in that way based on the country.
You had to make me think really hard.
Yeah. But now we need to take a look at... And it goes a little further. You need to know the car industry as well.
Yeah.
Your Jeep is through FCA, which is Fiat.
Italians.
That could be part of the influence there.
Yeah. You see.
So well, anyway, there's a difference in Fords as well, depending on whether they were built by Ford Germany, or Ford UK, or Ford America, which are the three major Ford manufacturers.
Yeah. I don't think it would be a good idea. I mean, I actually quite enjoy getting to a garage, and you know.
I think the cultural fear, all that stuff won't let it happen.
No.
I don't know. I'm for it, but that's then again, I've experienced it.
I'm not saying I wouldn't pump my... I mean, I'm happily take the thing off and pump my own fuel. It's not a problem, but I think it's nice that somebody actually does it.
In terms of... I'm a bit of a Joburg city slicker in that sense, and I want to get in, get done.
Because the problem comes in then, okay, cool, can you fill my oil? And then it's all the other stuff that you have to do. So now you...
You're putting water in with your windscreen wipers.
You're changing your own oil.
I check my own tire pressure with my own gauge. I don't trust them at the forecourt. I'm one of those guys. Let me fill my car with fuel.
All right. Well, there we go. Listen, guys, I mean, I can't believe it's... we've got 4 or 5 minutes to go here. But I want to do... I don't know if you guys know, but there's a company in Cape Town that is called Rent My Ride. And basically what the service is you can hire a vehicle from a private individual. So you literally register your vehicle on Rent My Ride. So if I look at myself, I mean, I was sitting this morning going, oh, I don't know if I'd let anybody else drive my car. Why? It's just a car. Some people fall in love with their cars. I think it depends on the individual. So if I'm taking my scooter to work Monday to Friday, why am I not using my vehicle that's now sitting under a carport actually generating income for me
while it's just chilling there? Told me 3 things. You never lend out your car, your tools, or your wife.
Okay, true that. Okay.
I've gotten 2 of those 3 right. You must really like me.
What about your golf clubs?
You can't touch my
body. I don't know. I think this is a fantastic thing because there's obviously precautions. They do safeguard the person that's renting the vehicle out. They've got insurance policies should anything go wrong. So I don't know. I was actually considering, I think I might just do it. And see if it
and
works.
And it's all good and well in a Uber sort of vibe.
Yes.
When you've got a Toyota Corolla, which is an appliance and is disposable per se, and you don't mind because they're dime a dozen. I don't want to say dime a dozen, but they're everywhere.
Yeah.
But when I'm sitting there and I've got my vehicle, of which there were only 3,000 brought into the country because I'm an enthusiast, I ain't renting that out, my friend.
Absolutely. But I mean, I look at me, I bought a secondhand Mitsubishi ASX. It's sitting. Why not? Somebody would want to drive
ever,
it Monday
have
to
you
Friday.
Ever rented,
let it make, work, let make money for you.
Have you ever rented tools from a tool rental company?
I have.
Have you ever seen the condition that those tools are in?
Yeah, listen, I don't think anyone's going to...
it's not mine, I don't
listen,
care.
We all know there's a saying out there, like, you know, ride it like a rental. Nothing revs like a rental. We know this. We know how people are when you're not driving your own vehicle.
Yeah.
So I think the chances are it is going to get stuffed up. But if it's generating
it's
enough
income...
It's
not necessarily going to get stuffed up. Come on. The rental industry in South Africa is... massive.
Yeah.
Absolutely
colossal.
Most
of our customers.
I travel all the time.
Yeah.
And while over the last kind of year we've transitioned to using Uber versus rental cars, for years that I was renting cars, traveling around the country, I would often get to a rental company and get the car because we had pre-booked it and have a conversation. Well, you know what? Do you have any rentals available if you didn't book? No, we don't. We're fully...
Yeah, they're gone.
It's tanked. There's no more cars there. And so that's a massive industry, number one. So I think this thing can only go upwards. That's the first kind of sense I get. The second thing is I have, you know... Granted, the cars are relatively new, but I've never driven a rental car that was screwed.
No, neither have I.
So, and a lot of those cars were over a year old.
And
so
you probably drive the car like you drive your own car anyway.
Yeah, I mean, I don't rev it like
you're a nice person.
Thanks.
This is the thing. You're not, you know, there are those guys who, 18 boys, you know, four so city golfs, golf tour, let's...
The
know.
Pareto principle applies to everything.
Absolutely.
80% of people will drive it decently, yeah, and this and the industry will work. Yeah. There will be 20% jackass.
Yeah, so go and check it out. Rent My Ride. I think it's something that that we can check out.
I think there's a little bit of a difference when there's a face behind it and not just a corporation.
Absolutely.
Also, yes.
That does change your mindset a bit.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway, guys, thanks very much. That's Auto Central, and we'll be back again in 2 weeks. George, Lawrence, Chad, Fazana, thank you very much.
Here we
thank
go.
You. It's been an absolute pleasure. And yeah, check us out on Facebook, Twitter, and we'll see you guys again in a couple of weeks.
This is CliffCentral.com.